Today on Dog Pound Report, we get exclusive access to the players as they get out in the sun. Hear what the veterans have to say about coordinators John DeFilippo and Jim O'Neill. We'll talk about the heavy Pac-12 draft class and debate the depth chart. Stay right here for the most exclusive access to Browns news and information only on Dog Pound Report.
Happy Mother's Day, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Dog Pound Report. I'm Andy Baskin, and my teammate on Sundays every Sunday is Nathan Zagur. It's great to be with you on this Happy Mother's Day.
Always a pleasure. Yes, Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And, Andy, it's also a happy time in Berea right now. The veterans are back for Phase 2 of the offseason program. The rookies are all in there, the ones who were drafted, the ones trying out with rookie minicamp taking place just the past couple of days.
Nathan, again, people think rookie minicamp, that's what the big slogan is for the group, but so much more than that going on in Berea.
Well, it is. You have the rookies who are here that were drafted. You have undrafted free agent rookies who are signed. You have rookies getting tryouts. You also have guys who played a little bit last year like Connor Shaw, Jacoby McDaniel, Calvin Barnett. They get to be there. Veterans who want to get a tryout can also be a part of this rookie minicamp like Anthony Armstrong, the receiver, was last year. But the veterans of the team are here to get on the practice field finally. No helmets, but they're out there for Phase 2 of the offseason program.
Great way to get some energy going in the offseason when it comes to a little Browns football. And our first trending topic, like Nathan said, the veterans have returned to Berea to get to the practice field and get an early jump on the 2015 season. And we had the opportunity to talk to a couple players who are definitely ready to get things going.
Cliff's been awesome. He's a super detailed man. And like I said, I think in the NFL, as an offense, if you're not super detailed, it's hard to be successful. So, you know, it's right on par with what we're used to. And, you know, we're rapid pace and he's up tempo and that's what he wants. And I think we're going to catch a lot of people off guard.
I love working for Flip. You know, for me, he's a guy that communicates really well. He is one of the main reasons why I wanted to come here.
It's nice to have the staff back and have everyone intact and, you know, just have guys that you're familiar with.
I'm very excited to, you know, the second year in the system. I'm a lot more comfortable being around the guys and being around the system. And we're looking to do better and build upon the previous year, so I'm very excited.
All right, let's talk about this as far as the coordinators go. And you've got one new coordinator, and you've got a guy coming back for a second season. But even think about the fact that these guys really didn't have this opportunity last year when you're working with new coordinators.
No, it's a great thing for John DeFilippo to be able to come in here. He has some continuity with Andy Moeller, George DeLeon is the offensive line coach, Brian Angelico, tight ends coach, and Wilbert Montgomery, running back coach, all still here. But he has an opportunity to put in his system. And talking to the players, they're very excited about it. You heard communication, up-tempo, and very detail-oriented. But the thing they didn't say that I've been told talking to people around the building is that they feel this offense suits the skills of these players much better than the offense a year ago did.
All right, in particular, Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel, people are very happy with what they're seeing from him. He's been described to me as a completely different guy from veterans to young players to coaches to people around the league that I've talked to about it. Johnny Manziel seems to be a different guy in his return to Berea, which is good because if this offense can get moving, running the football, set up those bootlegs on play action, Johnny Manziel can be very effective in this offense.
All right, so if you're John DeFilippo and you know Johnny Manziel is going to be one of the guys that's going to be gunning for that starting quarterback spot, to know that some of the veterans who may have thought that they weren't on the same page, now you're embracing all that and you've got a great synergy going on in Berea when you're trying to get this offense moving.
It's huge, but it's step one for Johnny. He's got to continue to show, but in terms of what he could do thus far, he's doing everything the right way. That's why Josh McCown still is the favorite to enter training camp as a starter, as Mike Pettine said this past week. But Johnny Manziel, I think, is starting to turn the corner, and if he can continue to do this, he's got all offseason to prove it, we could have a nice little battle come training camp.
All right, how about Jim O'Neill? You got some good veterans coming in on defense this year, and of course the draft was very healthy for defense.
So this defense last year couldn't stop the run, but they were great against the pass. And so what do? You bring in Randy Starks, you bring in Danny Shelton, you bring in Xavier Cooper. You got some great veterans in free agency. They draft 7 defensive players. He's got a lot of toys. He's fired up. And as you heard Pierre Desir say, one of my favorites, along with Billy Wynn there, this is the second year in the system for a lot of these guys. And as Jim O'Neill described to me, they can get to graduate level stuff now. And he expects this defense to have a quick start and get to the next level in 2015.
All right, let's head on to our next trending topic. Besides the veterans, the week saw drafted rookies and about 60 guys try out in the building this week. And the one thing that I noticed last year right away from Mike Pettine is that these guys get the opportunity, and if you're a veteran or not a veteran or a guy who's trying to make this team, the opportunity is there for you if you can play like a Brown.
That's no question, and that's what it's about, driving competition. That's been one of the tenets of Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine's tenure here with Cleveland. And this rookie minicamp is the first time you get to see these guys work with the coaches on the football field, wearing helmets, they're wearing their shells, they're going to go through drills. And last year, that's when Taylor Gabriel stood out, Robert Nelson stood out. You knew Isaiah Crowell was going to be able to tote the mail. And that's how Taylor Gabriel and Robert Nelson, guys who are just invitees, tryout guys, got an opportunity to get to training camp, ultimately ended up making the 53. That's what these guys are here to do. The rookies who are drafted, they're here to show the coaches, hey, when we get into the OTAs, get me in there and get me some reps with the veterans. The other guys are trying to say, hey, we deserve a shot to maybe get to training camp and have a chance to make this 53-man roster.
All right, let's talk about our last trending topic. And the Browns went on to sign four undrafted free agents this week. And you're talking about offensive lineman Tyler Luce, Darian Miller, defensive back Deontay Saunders, and defensive lineman Dylan Wynn. Any of these guys got a shot?
Two of them stand out to me. Tyler Luce was at Northern Illinois where they won the MAC last year. All MAC 2013-2014 as a left tackle on a line that gave up only 11 sacks all season last year. He was the critical pass protector there. So I think he's somebody who's battled injuries. If he can stay healthy, maybe he can push for a spot. And then Deontay Saunders, the defensive back, played at Florida for 2 years, started 16 to 20 games there as a safety. They say he can lay the lumber, moved to cornerback, had some off-the-field stuff, ended up at a smaller school down there, and now he has an opportunity as an undrafted, much like Isaiah Crowell, who started in the SEC, went to a small school because of off-the-field stuff, to come in and earn his way into the NFL.
But what makes you jump off the page compared to a guy who got drafted? I mean, it's not easy, especially when you've got scouts out there that are looking and saying, this is my guy, let's take a look at this guy. Let's make sure we draft him. You draft him. There's a commitment there. What makes an undrafted guy jump off the page like the Crow?
It's a guy who has talent. Isaiah Crowell, if he didn't have the issues that he had off the field, would have been drafted. So this is where you take a shot with no risk on a guy who's got a lot of talent. Say, hey, you've gone from the SEC down to a place like Tennessee State. Can you now, you've been humbled. Are you ready to come, be mature, grow up, and be a contributor in the National Football League? So you give them that opportunity.
Well, they got the shot. Let's see what they can do it. Stay with us, Dog Pound. Don't touch that dial. Dog Pound Report will return right after this.
After the break, we talk to Yogi Roth, former USC assistant coach and current Pac-12 analyst, about the Browns drafting seven players from the Pac-12.
Welcome back, Dog Pound. We are joined by Pac-12 college football analyst Yogi Roth. Yogi, how are things going in beautiful California today?
They're beautiful as always. Thanks for asking.
Yogi, great to have you with us. You know the Pac-12 very well, and the Browns went there early and often, starting with the 12th overall pick in the draft, Danny Shelton from Washington. We know he's a big nose tackle in the middle. Can he play all three downs in the NFL, and do you think he's going to be the Browns' starting nose tackle come this fall?
Well, I think the first thing that everybody has to recognize when you leave the Pac-12 on defense, you can't sub a lot. You know, Danny Shelton didn't get subbed out a lot, so he's playing 75 to 100 snaps a game. So he has that in his repertoire. You know, that's part of his toolbox. I think getting accustomed to the physicality of the league and being able to play, you know, those three downs is going to be an adjustment, just like it is for any young defensive lineman. But this is a young man that is going to fit into this scheme really well, as you guys know. I mean, this is a defense that brings pressure all the time. It's built around the defense. I think, what, 65% of your cap is defensive players. So he fits in well. I don't think he's going to have 10 sacks year one, but I think he's a guy that's going to take on the double team, take on a triple team, really plug at the nose. He's going to do a lot of unique things that you just haven't had on that defensive front in a while.
Yogi, it was a banner year for the Browns in the Pac-12. The Browns drafted seven players from the Pac-12 conference. Do you think that's a coincidence, or is there something to be said a little bit more about the Pac-12 and Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer?
Well, I think that, number one, you got to applaud Ray and the entire front office's plan. I mean, what did you guys, I think you rolled in with maybe 10 picks and you walked out with 13, something like that. And I was told a stat the other day that the Patriots, since 2001, had 33 more picks than the Jets. So the point is to get more players. And you guys did it, and you pulled from a conference that plays a variety of football. I mean, this is a conference that is continually getting better. I mean, you just look at the coaching staff last year compared to 10 years ago. It's better coaches, better teachers, better coordinators. They're recruiting better players. And, you know, the first 2 days of the draft, and you guys know this better than anybody, that's when really the talent shines. And the Pac-12 for the first time in a long time had more picks than the SEC or the ACC with 25. So I think it's a good job by them. I mean, they're getting guys that I think are all going to help within the next 2 years on this pro, you know, within this organization.
Yogi, other than Shelton, the Browns drafted six guys from the Pac-12. Who could become a star from that group of Nate Orchard, Ifo, the lottery ticket at the end of the draft, maybe Xavier Cooper from Washington State?
To me, this is a Nate Orchard all the way. I mean, Nate Fakafahua was his former name, right? This is a guy in high school who won a championship in football and in basketball, a dynamic athlete, was kind of that receiver type of body, all of a sudden gets to college and thrives as a defensive lineman. But most importantly, what I think he will do for this organization is that he was around a defensive line group, Starlo, the Kruger brothers, a lineage of players that held themselves accountable, a specific discipline. You know, this was the spot of this Utah team that was always so strong, and he became the next guy. So to watch him jump over the last few years, not only in terms of his play on the field, we saw that with all the sacks, the ability to get off the edge, to stand up, to put his hand on the ground, but really to be a mature student athlete, to me, I think he's going to make a big difference, especially with the way offenses are going in the NFL and him being able to play in a nickel package in a base defensive front as well.
Now, you know Browns fans were obsessed with getting a wide receiver in this draft. They didn't get one early, but they did get Vince Maley out of Washington State, who had 106 catches last year. I've heard Anquan Boldin potentially is a comparison for him. Is that fair, Yogi? And what do the Browns have in this young wideout?
I think in his measurables, it's fair. With his physicality, it's fair. I think he still needs to develop as a route runner. Maybe Anquan Boldin early on in his career when he's making the transition to that position. But this is a young man who's played a ton of wideout and ran so many unique routes against a variety of coverages, right? Against Mike Leach, you're seeing a different look every weekend. You can't just play too high. You can't just play single high. You've got to rotate guys, sky guys, different looks. And for him, he had the ability to move at times in the slot. Mostly he was outside, and he was seeing a lot of press coverage because the only time you can beat Mike Leach is really trying to take away the timing from their quarterback Connor Halliday in college to Vincent Maley. So I think you're going to get a guy who's got the big body to win on third down. You're going to get a guy who's going to be able to beat press coverage when he sees it. He's going to win against cover four on third and eight, third and nine, running a snap route. Most importantly, someone with natural hands who can go up and get the ball. I mean, you know this better than anybody, right? In the league, you got to make plays. There's not a lot of yak that happens. And he catches the ball away from his body. I mean, he's got natural hands. He was force-fed the football. If you compared him to other wideouts in terms of practice reps, he would probably double any receiver because they just didn't run the ball, period. So I think he's really honed his craft over the last couple of years, to be honest, man. And I think he's going to play for this team, and he's going to make plays early.
Hey, Yogi, before we let you go, where can we catch some of your work and to find out a little bit more about Pac-12 action?
Yeah, just follow the Pac-12 networks. I mean, I think that the honest truth that the, you know, the country saw over the National Football League's draft is that this West Coast, you know, style of play, you know, all the schools out here, they're launching players in the NFL, and it's not stopping. You know, I work with a lot of high school kids, obviously cover college, and the talent out here is just continually growing and growing. So I think for Browns fans, you should be stoked. You got a lot of players that will contribute. I think Ifo Ekpeomu will be the steal in the draft in 2 years if he can get healthy. And fundamentally, you got guys that are going to help you get better. And I think, you know, we should all tip our hats to Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine and that entire organization. Heck of a draft, one of the tops in the draft, I think, in 2015.
Awesome. Yogi, thank you so much for your time. Dog Pound, we're going to be right back.
When we return, Dog Pound Report will break down the new Browns rookies, how they'll adjust to pro play, and we'll take a close look at the running back and wide receiver depth charts.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. Joining us is Cleveland Browns senior writer for ClevelandBrowns.com. Andrew Gribble, great to see you today.
Hey, it's great to be back here. You know, we're winding down with our draft coverage, but we're winding back up with our rookie mini camp coverage and diving deep into those 12 players that have been on the roster.
The Gribbs, I got to tell you, you guys should get a big pat on the back. Turn out all that great contact, ClevelandBrowns.com, during the draft. And you keep it going here. And one of the articles that's there getting a lot of attention are the biggest questions facing the 12 draft picks of the rookies.
Yeah, tip of the hat to Kevin Jones. He really dug deep in that one. But it just really, it looks at maybe, you know, these players are really good. That's why the Browns drafted them. But to make that next adjustment to the NFL, you've got to answer a couple questions about your game. Even the top picks like Danny Shelton, can he rush the passer the way like he did at Washington? You know, it just, you don't see a big guy move around like that in the NFL very often. But can he do it? We'll wait and see.
And starting with Shelton, you know, he's going to be great against the run. You talked about can he get to the passer. 9 sacks, I think. think he can do it. This is a guy who seems very athletic, collapsing the pocket on third downs if he needs to do that, and also being able to go between the numbers.
He really prides himself on making the plays outside the hash marks. You know, the college game, those hash marks are spread out
They're
a little
wide.
Bit more. He likes running sideline to sideline. He's a big guy. You know, he gets knocked for that 40 time, but he's really good at 10-yard sprints, and he's just a menacing guy. I don't know if he's going to have that 9 sacks in the NFL on a regular basis, but 3, 4, or 5, Browns would love to have
up.
That.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about Cam Irving, the second pick for the Browns in the first round. Where is he going to play, and how much can we find out this early in camps?
Well, you know, I think we can narrow it down to the right side of the offensive line for year one. You look at that right guard position with John Greco, right tackle with Mitchell Schwartz. I think he's going to be there along with Michael Bowie, providing competition. I think we're going to get a better idea at rookie minicamp, see where they're lining him up, if it's going to be between that guard or tackle spot. Then you look long term, then it can get a little bit more interesting, because Alex Mack, obviously we know about the opportunity he has to opt out. Cam Irving maybe projects best at the NFL at center. But then again, I think the ideal situation is you bring Mack back and then you fit in Irving there as well. And you've got a good offensive line moving forward for the next few years.
I think the other interesting story, and it was on ClevelandBrowns.com, is with Cam and his love affair with the city. I mean, I don't know that he expected what was going to happen, and I think the fans have really embraced him, and he's super excited to be here.
Well, you know, Jameis Winston of Florida State takes up a lot of that spotlight. So, you know, Cam Irving's been kind of the man about town in Cleveland, and I think he really is going to embrace the city. He's a really smart guy. You know, he'd never been to a baseball game before, so he soaked it in at Progressive Field. I think he's going to be a player that fans really like.
All right, so those are the top two picks for the Browns. On day two, they bring in three more guys, Nate Orchard, Duke Johnson, Xavier Cooper. But everybody wants to know about Duke Johnson. And when you think about the fact that this guy was the leading rusher in the history of the U, when they've had Gore, McGahee, Edgerrin James, Clinton Portis, that's kind of mind-blowing. And all of a sudden they're talking about he's going to come in here, he's going to be a third down back, he's going to return kicks. What's the story with the Duke?
Well, you know, I think the coaches kind of bristle when they hear the term third down back. It kind of takes on a negative connotation in the NFL, but clearly that's going to be a role he's going to embrace right away. But then you wonder what his long-term role is within that running back rotation. Terrence West, Isaiah Crowell, they're going to want some carries too. But I think if you can mesh those three together, get them when they're at their strongest, you're going to have three running backs running at the top of their game in the fourth quarter when you need them most.
I think it's going to be interesting to see if they view it kind of like the Patriots did when they had Ridley and Blunt, who are the running backs, and Shane Vereen, Sugar Shane as I like to call him, was kind of that pass-catching change of pace back. They were all running backs, but kind of played different positions. It'll be interesting to see if that's what Duke does or if he just gets right in the mix right away.
The key thing with him is obviously his hands. He had a ton of receptions, big plays out of the backfield, and we've heard it over and over again from John DeFilippo. He loves running backs that can catch the ball.
We're going to throw the ball to him.
It's
great.
He's going to be maybe one of those fantasy football studs early on.
All right, so you're talking about throwing the ball. Let's talk about day three then. When you pick up Vince Bailey, and now wide receiver. Everybody wants to hear about the wide receiver. Wide receiver. What's this guy going to do, and what's he going to look like?
You got to remember, Vince Bailey's only been playing football for a few years now, so he's still kind of a work in progress, but clearly, as a senior, he produced at Washington State, particularly as a downfield threat. He had two games over 250 receiving yards, had 90-yard catch, 81-yard catch, so he is a downfield threat. It's just a matter of where he works in within the receiving rotation. You know, a lot of talk about, a lot of criticism toward the Browns wide receivers. This might be one of the most competitive groups in camp. Travis Benjamin's going to want to be getting in the mix. Taylor Gabriel. And then you got the veterans, Brian Hartline, Dwayne Bowe, Andrew Hawkins. I mean, this is a deeper group than maybe is given credit for, and it's going to be a challenge for Vince Bailey to get in there right away. But if he proves he can be a downfield threat, they're going to give him the ball.
I don't know if he's going to ultimately be a vertical guy in the National Football League, and talking to a lot of scouts, Anquan Boldin is the name I hear the most in terms of what his game could be in the National Football League, and we certainly would take that here in Cleveland. One other real quickly, Ifo, the last pick of the draft, lottery ticket. I love it.
Yeah, you know, we talked with him earlier this week. I think he's been humbled throughout this entire process, both first with the knee injury, kept him out of the national championship, and then secondly, he's sitting there waiting for his name to be called. He had to wait all the way till the end of the seventh round, and he knew it was only because of his knee injury. You know, the ability hasn't been a question. He's a first or second round pick.
Absolutely.
If he is healthy. He's got a lot of experience, a lot of production at Oregon. And, you know, he was really one of those cornerbacks that was so good he wasn't really targeted all that much. So his stats really don't jump off the page. But, you know, he's about 4 or 5 months out. And the good thing with him is there's no need to rush him back. He's going to be 100%, 110% before they're even pushing him into action because, you know, the Browns have a pretty good situation at quarterback.
Yeah. All right, Gribbs, we'll make sure we read you at ClevelandBrowns.com. I can't let you go without you saying Happy Mother's Day to your mom. You better say it.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
See, there you go. Good enough. All right, Dog Pound Report rolls on right after this.
What do Andrew Hawkins and Taylor Swift have in common? We'll have to find out when Dog Pound Report returns with our social post of the week. And for FanFest tickets, we'll have to stay tuned to win.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. Our social post of the week comes from social media mogul Andrew Hawkins. And this, Nathan, is unbelievable to watch this. Check out some of the fancy footwork. This video has been seen by 28 million people. This is truly amazing. Look at his footwork there, Nathan.
It's outrageous. His feet are light, and he's got the moves. 28 million people touched by this video. Those are Taylor Swift numbers, Andy.
I don't think Andrew Hawkins and Taylor Swift at the same time, but, man, he's got some fancy footwork there. There's no doubt about it. All right, so, crazy week for off-season workouts and just everybody getting their work in this week. I mean, really an enjoyable week.
It's great.
To get back to football.
Yeah, you feel like football's in the air. The field is painted. There are people out there playing and practicing. The rookies putting a lot of work the last few days, trying to impress the coaches, trying to earn spots in OTAs. Other guys battling for their lives to try to get invited to training camp and have a chance really to make this 53.
But it's also a big deal for strength and conditioning. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, you got to get in shape. That's what it's all about. Get ready for the rigors of a big season.
Paul Ricci being able to do what he needs to do with these guys and get them lifting. But, I mean, these guys are always lifting. It's not like the old days, like baseball spring training. Guys would come in fat, out of shape. It's the same thing for football. These guys used to have two jobs. Now their job all year is to stay in shape.
Get in shape, be in condition. Justin Gilbert's been tweeting out pictures of himself. He's in fantastic condition. It's a state-of-the-art facility that the Browns have. They're employing new methods. Paul Ricci at the head of that program to make sure these guys are fit and ready to rock and roll come Sundays.
All right, give us your prediction. It is prediction time for you, so give us your weekly prediction.
All right, I think the Browns, when you look at the depth chart now with the talent on the defensive line and in the defensive backfield, somebody's going to come a-calling. The Browns will make at least one trade before training camp with a good name player because they just have so much depth.
What are they going to bring back? That's my question.
Could be a future draft pick. Could be a player. Could be a wide receiver. Who knows?
All right, I'm going to go baseball for my prediction of this. And, you know, it's been a slow start for the Indians. I'm going to say by the end of the month, the confidence level will go up. The health will be a little bit better, and pitching is going to turn things around. I'm not going to say they're going to be in first place, but the Indians are going to have a little bit of a better run here towards the end of the
month. Let's hope so.
It can't get much. I don't want to say it can't get much worse, but it can't get much worse.
Mm-mm.
All right, so many things to do and so little time. Dog Pound, thanks for joining us this week. If you want a chance to win two tickets to FanFest, visit clevelandbrowns.com/BrownsTV and enter the keyword fest. My friend, it is time to take us home.
Hi, Mom. Happy Mother's Day. And remember, we bark together in the Dog Pound Report. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.